this is where we use it.
And I'm Kristen Brave. You're listening to Global Media News from the New Media Newsroom on OWWR Old Westbury Web Radio.
This week, on New Media News,
who rules Twitter, bots or humans?
Do we need an independent Supreme Court for social media? This is
Blockchain 101. What the heck is blockchain anyway?
Which is the best music streaming service for you? Spotify, Google Play, Apple Music?
What is social sorting, and why is Facebook doing it?
Is YouTube running data on child humans?
Why is BlackBerry suing Snapchat?
Is Venmo a paid app for social or social app?
All this and more coming up on OWWR Old Westbury Web Radio, streaming live from the State University of New York College at Old Westbury.
Just how big a problem are bots in social media? Are bots all bots? President Dell is on the block. Greg, are you looking into the role of bots in Twitter? What made you choose this topic? And just how big a role do bots play? And what do you see the evil Twitter feeds?
Bots on Twitter represent a good amount of the activity. Recently, Twitter has been on about how they're going to do something. They're going to try to at least decrease the number of levels of the level of activity that malicious bots are having on the site. Well, a report came out the other day that maybe they're not really doing so much, at least up to now. About your likes on Twitter, you look at them and you say, hey, what does that tell you about a certain person? Okay, let's say that good percentages are just done by bots. Right. All right. So now, while this is a problem that I look into with the likes, the users, even with the links that they're posting. A study came out that said that 66% of the links that are posted in general are just done by bots, right? So that means that some algorithm or service checked that you're okay. And based off that, you're just, bombarded. Basically, it's all just commercial bots. It's just, if you've ever brought that up, one story about department students, regardless of what angle you're looking at, you're just going to get a list of all the stories and posts that every angle that it's just, it's set up around kind of exacerbate issues right now, and so I would, I'm just kind of offended that they didn't say anything.
So, how has Twitter responded to this issue?
Well, they really haven't. That's really, kind of what it's really about all the stuff. They just say they're going to do something, and then they report it.
So why should the average Twitter user be worried about this?
Well, it's just diluting what Twitter was ever for. If Twitter was just a place for you to complain about trying to hide or something, you guys have to go to what their cell phone is. So is it really what your
this week, Facebook CEO comes up with a commission to testify. There's a brave is following Facebook's attempts to create a knowledge of fake news content that's causing so much controversy. Mark Zuckerberg has a proposal for how to deal with social media content that causes conflict. Kristen, what is the problem with what does social media do?
So, there's been a lot of fake news stories recently on Facebook, and Facebook really doesn't have a specific way to deal with it. So, for example, if a Facebook post gets reported, it just gets sent to the Facebook community team, and they choose if the post is getting taken down or not. So, it's people working for Facebook who are the ones deciding what stays or goes on Facebook, and there's no way to pull this. So, Zuckerberg thinks that that's not how a good functioning democratic system works. And he said an option to do this would be for people who don't work for Facebook, who aren't coming up with ties to Facebook, if they were to go through this post and make a Supreme Court. But Zuckerberg doesn't see that happening soon, but he said that would be a way to make Facebook more democratic and democracy with the government, because since there's the CEO of Facebook isn't an elected official, it's kind of difficult to enforce a kind of democratic system and have this Supreme Court. So, and fake news on Facebook has been a big deal lately because a lot of other organizations have proposed for like fact-checking tools on social media, because a lot of advertisers, they don't want their ads on non-credible sources, so being able to sort through what fake news about will help try and fix this problem. And it's different from area to area for social media, because in the U.S., much of what's put on social media isn't regulated by the government. And this is difficult because Facebook allows users from anywhere to share content, so whether it's credible or not. So it's hard to kind of have like a government for Facebook's exemptions from anywhere. And each country has different rules for their own social media and how people can use them. So a big example of this is the 2016 election with the interference of Russian bots on Facebook. And this also, a lot of these bots were like pro-Trump tweets, which was obviously not fair. And then another example during the 2016 election is a fake newspaper, the Denver Guardian, the Denver Post, they posted a fake story for them to share on Facebook, and there was no way, it wasn't taken down, so people were able to see it and it spread and became popular. So,
how do you feel about these potential fact checking or application ideas on Facebook? So, how do you feel about that?
I think it's a good idea, but I think there needs to be, like I said, list of rules and regulations, because I don't think it depends who is going to be the person fact-checking, like who they work for, and their publishers, and things like that. So if they have some supplies, then we should check
them. Do you think that this definitely is becoming true in your selection as well?
Yes, it's already an issue with the upcoming election. Next election, it doesn't seem like anything's going to come soon for Facebook, but I'm talking about it, so I think this would definitely be one of the future elections. So for Global Media News, I'm Kristen Grant. Back to you again.
Thanks, Kristen. Watch it. What is it? It's funny. The original computer music streaming services is best. Stay with us.
Welcome back to Global Media News. I'm Kristen Brave. Marcy Mendonca is digging deep into blockchain for us. She is here to give us an introduction to blockchain so that we can understand why there's so much hype about blockchain these days. Marcy, what are the basics of blockchain?
Thank thank you, Kristen. So a blockchain is basically a continuously growing list of records called blocks, which are linked and secured using cryptography. Each block typically contains a cryptographic hash of the previous block, timestamp, and transaction data. And by design, it's inherently resistant to modification of the data. And it's an open distributed ledger that can record transactions between two parties efficiently and in a verifiable and permanent way. For use as a distributed ledger, a blockchain is typically managed by a peer-to-peer network collectively, adhering to a protocol for internode communication and validating new blocks. And once the data is recorded in any given block, it can't be altered without the alteration of all the previous blocks, which requires collision of the network majority. And it's basically the first digital currency to solve the double spending problem without the need of a trusted authority or a central server. According to The Economist, it's just basically math. They said that mathematical scrambling is used to boil down on an original piece of information into a code known as a hash. And like I said previously, any attempt to tamper with any part of it is going to be apparent immediately because it won't match the old hashes. Dom Tapscott, who is a businessman and a writer, he described that there are people called miners who are in charge of making sure that everything matches up, and they have massive computing power at their fingertips. Every 10 minutes, a block gets created with all the transactions from the previous 10 minutes, and the miners work to validate that block, and that block ID is linked to the previous block and so on to create a chain of blocks, and they are the people who basically monitor it.
So what is the expansion of blockchain for everyday people versus people who use it for business?
So Don Tapscott, as he said, businessman, and he also is the author of the book, The Blockchain Revolution. He's called blockchain technology the trust protocol. And he basically said that you don't need intermediaries to ensure the parties will act with integrity because the platform that you're using does that for you. And he says that basically for the first time now, people everywhere can trust each other and transact peer-to-peer, and digital assets would be all located in one place. He said digital assets like money, music, and everything in between aren't stored in a central place, but are distributed across a global ledger using the highest level of cryptography. And when a transaction is conducted, it's posted globally across millions and millions of computers. And investors see potential in that. While the price of Bitcoin and other virtual currencies have plummeted this year, investment in other blockchain projects have remained strong. And in the first 3 months of 2018, venture capitalists put $500 million into 75 blockchain projects, more than double what they raised in the last quarter of 2017, according to data from PitchBook. And various corporations are attempting to apply the blockchain model, according to the New York Times. Some departments of the United Nations now have blockchain experiments looking to tackle things such as climate change, the delivery of humanitarian aid, and the identity challenges faced by stateless people.
Can someone run for it?
So, pretty much Google is pretty helpful because now there's a lot of information about it. Of course, you have to be wary of fake news and where you're getting information from, but John Oliver did a segment on it, which is very in-depth and helpful, and Don Tapscott, who I previously talked about, did a TED Talk on it, where he also explains it very much in-depth, and it's a way that you don't have to, like, go through and read about it, and you can get the basics by just, you know, listening to it in the car on the way to work, or whatever you need to do. And now for Global Media News, I'm Marcy Vindanka. Back to Miguel.
Thanks, Marcy. We all love music, and increasingly the way to listen to music is through a streaming service online or on mobile.
market for music streaming is very competitive. James Lardizzoni is with us in Studio A to help us understand which of the major players will win this competition for music lovers and the profits they can generate. James, which are the most popular streaming services and why should we choose one or the other?
Well, the most popular streaming service is Apple Music, Spotify, and Google Play Music. In my opinion, I believe there really isn't much of a difference between them. It's really, like, whatever you prefer more. So, like, if you want to spend less, like, financially, or if you want, like, an easy setup, or better music quality, or even, like, a better music selection as well, like, you know, with more, like, songs on it than the other, then, like, you should see, like, which one is actually better to use. For the better price, well, for a single, like, non-student subscriber, the price would be, like, $9.99 per month on, like, each streaming service. So, they're really all the same, Apple Music, Spotify, and Google Play Music, but they also all offer a family plan up to 6 people, which would be $14.99 a month. However, like, Spotify actually requires all the members to live at the same address. So, technically, you can, like, on the Apple Music and such, like, you can actually, like, have, like, your friends, like, you know, because, you know, like, they're not living at the same address. So, you can all, like, just all chip in for, like, everything. And, like, Apple Music and Spotify also have, like, a single student discount for $4.99 per month. And they also all offer a free trial as well. But Spotify and Google Play Music have a 30-day free trial, while Apple Music has a 3-month free trial. So, what's the better deal? I think it would be, like, Apple Music would be good for financial purposes, and especially because, like, streaming music is also a lot more cheaper to actually do this because, like, you know, 'cause years ago, like, the society, like, bought, like, CDs or, like, tapes, like, you know, like, we can also, like, be honest, like, most of us, like, downloaded music illegally, like, with applications, like, LimeWire, CrossWire, like, you know, but, like, and people still buy, like, CDs, but, like, and buy songs, but it's $1.29 per song on, like, iTunes, sometimes they're, like, 99 cents, so, obviously, but, like, people complained about, like, that price being, like, so much because they download a lot of music into their devices, like you know, onto their iPods or, like, MP3s. Like, you know, like, if a person downloads 120 songs from iTunes, you'd be paying over $150. Like, you know, like, that is just, like, crazy. Like, you know, but with streaming services, like, you can stream music on a platform for, like, a low rate each month, so you'll save money and put as many songs on your stuff, so...
Which would you say is the one that has the easiest sign-up and setup to use?
Well, signing up and setting up for, like, these streaming devices can be hard for some people. I'll say, like, mostly, like, young people probably know how to, like, do it more so. But, like, you know, but when you're older, you know, like, you just want a simple way to, like, do it, you know. So, like, each streaming service takes, like, 5 minutes or less, though, to sign up and set up with, like, an account with the service. Apple Music and Google Play ask you for your music preferences before building your library of music, and Spotify actually builds your preference based upon what you download or listen to. So I think Spotify would be an efficient way to sign up and set up, as it doesn't ask you more questions, like your recommendations, as it just bases upon, like, what you actually listen to. I do, actually. I use Apple Music. I have a student plan, so I pay $4.99 a month. I actually really enjoy it a lot more than, like, I've used Spotify before, but, like, the free edition one, I think it's for, like, a 30-day free trial. I used, actually, like, maybe a year or two ago or so. So, but, like, I prefer, actually, Apple Music right now, how to use it, and just, there's still, like, a lot more, like, music selection, too, you know, so.
I think it's a good
There actually is. I know people use like Pandora, like iHeartRadio, and stuff. But like those are more so like station wide stuff instead of like, you know, putting like your own like music, like, you know, like if you want like a single song, like, you know, you want in your library, like, you know, and like Pandora and stuff. Like, I don't know that many people that actually like use that. Like, I know it's like mostly free. But like the thing is, like, there's commercials, like, you know, so nobody really wants to listen to commercials. I know I didn't want to listen to it, like, while listening to the radio. So, for Global Media News, I am James Arzoni. Back to you, Kristen.
Thanks, James. Up next, social sorting. What is it? Why is Facebook doing it? And why is it changing political communications and social media? And is YouTube mining the data of child users? We will be right back. My co-host Miguel Castro is also on the Facebook beat this week. Miguel, explain what you mean by social sorting. Why does Facebook sort people into categories, and who uses that information?
Thank you, Christine. All right, so recently there's been a big debate for controversial selection with Facebook, specifically through the fact that if you check on your account settings, they'll include the recognized group which Facebook selects you into. So, for example, you can go under your settings on your account, check ads, and under the ads, you can check specific political organizations. So, for example, as someone who has various different viewpoints and has been switching to politics, just thinking about the changes and getting other people out. In my last Facebook profile, I checked through the process, and I realized I was definitely conservative, which had me kind of worried because even though I have former conservative viewpoints, I had to do that really able to. What Facebook does is that it gives you information based on past or in general what your leaning is. So it's been feeding me more conservative news, and now I've been leaning more towards the left. And this is concerning other people because the fact that Facebook is sorting people into set groups and pushing more advertisers of that set group, I just kind of weird to be organized in addition to the fact that this information is being used in addition to our data in order to sell it to these companies. So specifically, it is the fact that they can harvest your profile and there's nothing really can do about it. You can turn off the advertisements or specifically how you want to see, but they're still going to have the information that you have. This is, comes at a very specific time due to the fact that I'm currently involved with bodies on the grid for me in court about with Facebook. At the same time that this is going on, it's very interesting. So for those that want to find out right now, if you can go into check on your settings menu, hit on ads, preferences, and under the politics loop, it will either guess based on your location or make an assumption based on the data and the likes. So for example, if I like something that's pro-life, if you're from your choice of survey, if you like something that's pro-life, if you're from your choice of life. The sorting options are based on whether you're conservative, moderate, liberal, and moderate. Personally, I think that these settings and these recommendations are maybe not too much. I think that even though we all have set politics, they change all the time. To have Facebook within money based off the information we think, it's kind of, it's obviously, that's why I'm fighting this, but to have it somewhat be sorted into just one group, I don't think that's appropriate. I know that you can turn off the regular ads, but of course this doesn't do much, so it just doesn't do the news that pops up in the episodes or stuff.
So, how accurate do you think this is?
Of course, in my case, I opened up, I have various different Facebook accounts just throughout the last couple of years. So, I checked all of them and I saw various different changes. So, for example, the ones when I was in high school came out as very liberal. The one that I was during the election came up as more conservative. And the one that I have now is more moderate. So, I think that it's even though it's accurate in the fact that during those times, I was leaning more towards, I had various different changes in political interests. I think right now it's accurate, but I think it could be manipulated by the user. The fact that people can organize them into set groups and make money off it is something that.
So, what does your Facebook have you at now since you said you said
Right now, since I just moved to college, I'm really doing some of the work again. Right now, last time I checked, it was more liberal, somewhat leaning towards conservative, depends on how you check. I mean, leaning towards moderate, it depends on how you check. But for the majority of fellow New Yorkers and fellow students, there is nearly all liberal guys, very liberal, like in general. This, of course, has some exceptions, as any exceptions have been mostly extremely conservative or conservative, but that's a whole mix of real person. I think that, what do you think of
well, like you said, it's based off of the pages you like and the groups you're in, and I feel like I don't really understand what you're it, but I really don't know what they could have me as, because I've only had like a Facebook for a year or so. Thanks, Miguel. Joe Fryman is our YouTube expert. This week, he is following a story about data privacy and children on YouTube. What are the rules about child accounts on YouTube, and is there a privacy issue here, and what has this got to do with data mining?
Thanks, Kristen. This is a little bit of a departure from my previous stories. It's more in the strictly business side of things for the most part. Right after everything with Facebook Analytica, Cambridge Analytica began, the Federal Trade Commission received a bunch of complaints from more than 20 child advocacy groups. There are different sectors of the political spectrum. All of them were basically saying that YouTube has been using the data collected from child users strictly, things like your young cousin's iPad where they watch Disney reruns or something on YouTube, one that only they are using, their parents aren't using for other, obviously, adult-oriented things. So all of that data is being collected and used to better ad target these children by showing toy ads or commercials for shows that children watch to make it more in tune with what audience is perceiving them. There's a lot of more outcry on this because in all extents it's taking advantage of children. While it's not directly harming them, it's an invasion of privacy, one that they can't respond to yet, but still, you can't really get away with invasion of privacy, especially in today's world. There was a piece through TechCrunch. They were trying to sum up the issue in more layman's terms. The ads would include cartoon videos, nursery rhymes, toy ads. So the new Marvel toy that comes out to coincide with the Infinity War, they're going to show that before a child's videos because that's the target audience. It's a very divided issue.
I think personally, I've seen quite a variety of different ads. What I've always been doing. See the things based on like sports or video games compared to the news and little buddies on iPad, where I get things like, oh, this tour is coming out and this show is coming out. So these advertisements do think that a variety of things are doing more harm than you are actually not helping out.
It's not a matter of harm, it's a matter of parents viewing this out as an invasion of their child's privacy. And to them, there is no other side to it. Business side, that makes perfect logical sense. You would want toy ads to air in front of children's, in front of children. So from that side of things, it makes sense. Most people are not going to see that because a lot of people affected, not a lot of people affected, are parents. They are parents of children. These are their children that they are responsible for, and this is someone threatening their child in some way. They might not fully understand it, because I'm sure plenty don't. It's still, that's all they see. And it's a very personalized issue, unfortunately, so it can't really be debated logically just yet. We have to get past that initial wave of outrage.
Do you think that this might come as well? How does this compare to some channels that are trying to present specific toys or specific reviews as well? Do you think that this is, that you think that that's appropriate? Or do you think that this kind of Facebook thing is completely different from just video content?
The sites, the toy reviewer sites and all of those kind of things, that's a separate issue. It's, those are legitimate channels. Toy reviews, unboxings, those are legitimate forms of video in terms of YouTube's terms. And a lot of people make a lot of money off of that. There's been a lot more investigation into these big groups because of this, into the bigger toy review sites or the channels that create the advertisements for different toys. Those sites with their very large viewer counts are making a lot of money from ad revenue. So that is a side of it. Again, it is the business side of it, and a random mother in the middle of the U.S. is not going to understand that side of it or care. But the objective with coverage of this should be to not just educate those people, but to help them understand the full situation so they can have something to say that as a conversation, that's not just angry parent number one.
Do you think that has YouTube ever commented on the
Yeah, they responded with, our site isn't meant for people aged 13 and up, which is true. That's not really a response. That is what they're hiding behind. That was their official first response to it. It makes sense. Doesn't make it any better. And as of right now, it's unfortunate. Because there's not much anyone can do until the investigation starts, which I believe they are beginning right now. For Global Media News, I'm Joe Fryman. Back to you, Miguel.
Thanks, Joe. In a minute, why is BlackBerry so essential? Let's talk about them. Is it a payment app pretending to be social, or a social app to make it a payment? Stay with us. How many people are using Venmo to pay their check these days, or pay back friends when you're out of money? Marissa Bola is looking at the popularity of Venmo payments. Marissa, let's start with the basics. What is Venmo? How big is it? And who owns it? Do you use Venmo?
Venmo is a free digital wallet that lets you make and share payments with your friends. So, for example, if you're out to dinner and you want to split your bill with someone, or you owe your friend for a concert ticket. So, I do use Venmo, not a lot, but I'm starting to use it more and more just because it's so much easier. So, Venmo is owned by PayPal, which I'm sure everyone knows what that is. It's been around for years. And it's just an easier form of payment when you're ordering something online, and it was mainly made for eBay. So it's PayPal is something that's connected directly to your checking account or your credit card. So whenever you want to buy something online, you could just use your PayPal account, and it's just an easy transaction. So Venmo is sort of the same thing. Its transfers are made by using a mobile app or something on the web. So say you have an app that's called Venmo on your phone, and it's attached to your friend's phones who also have Venmo, and you're able to transfer money to them digitally if your credit card or your debit card is attached and if they have Venmo. So Venmo is so easy, and you get notifications on your phone once a transaction is made. And I think Venmo is cool because it's kind of like a new social media app, because it includes social media networking, and you're interacting with your friends and whoever, like any other social media app. So when a user makes a transaction, the transaction details are shared on the user's, they call it a newsfeed. So a Venmo newsfeed looks like just any other newsfeed. So, I mean, if you have a Venmo or you know someone that does, an example of a newsfeed would say the person's name. So, for example, Marissa paid Miguel for the movies yesterday. And then it would, you can put emojis on it, just like another social media app, or you can comment or like it. So once you make a transaction, all your friends can see, depending on when, how your settings are on. So it kind of mimics any other social media app. And there's a worldwide Venmo feed, a friends-only feed, and a personal feed. So each feed is different, and it depends if you're what setting you have it on. You can see what everyone's doing and who they're paying. So Venmo encourages social interaction on the app through the comments and the emojis. All you really need is just to download the app on your iPhone and connect it to your debit or credit card. It's pretty easy. I feel like anyone between that I know of and from the articles that I read, it seems like people from the age 18 to 35, so that would be considered the millennial age. And I think there's some older people that probably use it, but I think the millennials are using it more just because they like it to be easy nowadays, because it's so, the technology is here and they can use it in any way possible. So I definitely think it's the millennials, plus, everyone else that maybe uses it.
And what are they using Venmo for?
They're using it for things to pay. So say you go out with your friends and you have 10 people, just easier if everybody has Venmo, they throw it into the Venmo and do that transaction. Or, for example, I babysit on the side part-time. So the family that I babysit for has been paying me through Venmo, because it's easier for them and it's easier for me, goes right into my bank account, goes right out of their bank account, and we don't have to worry about anything, and they remember how much they pay me each time, and it's just an easy, quick thing. I just walk out, no cash, nothing, which a lot of people like nowadays. They don't like to use, they don't carry around cash at all, most people.
Are the payments do they clear immediately, or does it take a couple of days?
I think it takes about 3 days. I'm not exactly sure, but because I don't really look at it as soon as I make a transaction. But from what I read, it said about 2 to 3 business days. Yeah, so I mean, it's like any other bank account. If you cash a check, it's going to take about a couple business days to clear. So for Global Media News, I'm Marissa Evola. Back to you now.
Thanks, Marissa. Thanks to Kristen Drake for the place that you did this week. Thanks to Ricardo Morales and the Good Hand Family for producing our show.
Today we heard reports from Kristen Drake, Miguel Castro, Marissa Evola, Aisha Foster, Joseph Ryman, James Lardizzoni, Greg Mandel, and Marcy Mendonca.
Global Media News is brought to you by WWR, Old Westbury, and the Media Communications Department here at the State University of New York.
For more media news and resources, check out our latest posts on The Catalyst at oldwestburycatalyst.org, where you can listen to all of our webcasts and even subscribe to the podcast.
Follow us on Twitter at OWWRGLP. Use our Twitter feed to keep up with the latest news for aspiring journalists and media professionals. That's at OWWRGLP.